Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The worst forms of child labor, a new report. Meanwhile, how telecom workers could benefit from the infrastructure bill. And today on the show, the Musicians Union in New York and the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Thursday, September 30th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. Adam Krauthammer is going to be our first guest. He comes from the Musicians Union in New York. Local 802AFM.org is their website. He's actually filling in for Maria Ritacco. Maria was supposed to be on the show today. She is one of the striking nurses. There's hundreds of them in Worcester, Massachusetts. But they have been fighting for over 200 days. We'll stay on that story, and when she's available, she'll be on the show. But Adam, he is president of, like I said, Local 802, which is the largest local union of professional musicians in the entire world. They have 7,000 members. He's been president for the last 3 years. He started in the union back in 2006. And if you go to their website, you can see how long they've been around. 1921, celebrating 100 years. And their mission statement is pretty simple. We unite to fight for the common interests of all musicians by advancing industry standards that dignify our labor and honor and enrich our art. We seek to organize a community of all musicians and aspiring musicians, and we reach out to all who share our interests as well as our passion. Well, as you know, the last 18, 19 months have not been good for musicians in New York, in Chicago, in Cleveland, all over, all because of the pandemic. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get into the American Rescue Plan and how that helped so many musicians, especially with their pensions and the vaccine. A lot of venues, you can't even go in today unless you show that you've gotten the vaccine or you have a negative COVID test. So we'll touch on that as well. Adam Krauthammer, president of Local 802, the American Federation of Musicians. Later in the show, we're going to link up with Jimmy Hart. Jimmy is president of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, and he's had that position for the last 5 years. His career as a trade unionist, I'll tell you, he's got a real rich career that goes back to 1976. He began his career in New York City as a plumber, local number one of the United Association. Then he went up the ranks, apprenticeship, journeyman, instructor, foreman, local union officer. During his tenure in New York City, he represented civil service employees and led government employee collective bargaining negotiations that yielded or protected some of America's highest wages and most progressive workplace conditions enjoyed by government employees. Great guy. We'll get into the specifics of the Metal Trades Department. We're talking about 17 national and international unions, all affiliated, and their executive council. Wow. Terry O'Sullivan, general president of LIUNA. Lonnie Stevenson, electrical workers. Eric Dean from the iron workers. Let's see. Robert Martinez, president of the machinists and aerospace workers. Mark McManus of the United Association. And then there's Greg Rivard of the heat and frost insulators. That's just a few on the executive council. We'll also talk about safety and why America needs more unions. It's real simple. I mean, take a look when America was strong, going back to the 50s with union density. And Jimmy will speak to this. when one out of three workers across the board, private, government, you name it, were members of a union, things were a whole lot better then. No doubt about that. For workers, no doubt. Jimmy Hart, our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the U.S. Department of Labor announced the release of the 20th annual edition of the findings on the worst forms of child labor. The report shines a spotlight on child labor abuses around the world and describes progress made by some countries in upholding their international commitments to eliminate those abuses. Well, guess what? We're not doing very, very well. For the first time in decades, global progress against child labor has stalled. In fact, it reversed direction. The International Labor Organization and the UN's Children's Fund estimate right now 160 million children toil in child labor. That's up 8 million since 2016, accounting for almost 1 in 10 children around the world. About 79 million work in conditions likely to harm their health, safety, or morals. In sub-Saharan Africa, children in child labor account for more than the rest of the world combined. And without action, an additional 8.9 million children could end up in child labor by next year, 2022, all due to rising poverty driven by the pandemic. Now, here's one thing that came out of yesterday's report. They released a better trade tool, a new web-based tool that integrates the list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor with international trade data. The data includes harmonized schedule tariff codes and enables enhanced trade data analysis, supply chain mapping, and identification of risks and priorities in strategic planning to combat child and forced labor. So the bottom line is this: if you're trading with a company or a country, rather, that is exploiting children, maybe you should stop trading with them and the forced labor will stop and the child labor will stop. So that all came out of our Labor Department yesterday. In the meantime, the two sides are still going back and forth in Washington on the reconciliation bill. There's too many Democrats on board that are saying that the reconciliation bill is too expensive and they want to whittle it down. And Nancy Pelosi is saying she's not going to take a vote until they iron all that out. But in the meantime, this has popped up. Part of the current infrastructure bill has a provision that could give competitive advantage to unionized telecom workforces. That's right. The bill gives preferences to companies with a record of adhering to labor and employment laws for distribution of the $42.5 billion in broadband funds. State and local governments and nonprofits that receive broadband work funds would be required to consider a company's, quote, demonstrated record of and plans to be in compliance with federal labor and employment laws before awarding any of the money. This factor is part of a four-factor analysis, including the speed of the broadband service, how fast the project can be completed, and whether it serves a high poverty, underserved area. However, there's more. The bill's provision could deter larger companies from seeking the federal money, and it could be difficult to enforce. Accepting the funds could also require companies to comply with Davis-Bacon, which, as you know, requires construction contractors on federally funded projects to pay at least the local prevailing wage plus fringe benefits. Now, that would give some unions an advantage for work bidding, since often that pay aligns with what unions have already negotiated prior. So we'll see what happens here. Certainly good news for the Communication Workers of America, who have been lobbying for broadband for years. Because, in fact, they started this campaign called Speed Matters. This was probably about 7 or 8 years ago. There's so many parts of our country that are not being served by the internet. And you think about today, the internet is like the phone from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s when you think about technology today. So we'll see what happens out of the talks in Washington. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Local 802 of the American Federation of Musicians in Greater New York.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle's real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line and welcome to the show, Adam Krauthammer. Adam is the president of Local 802 of the American Federation of Musicians in Greater New York, which, by the way, is the largest local union of professional musicians in the entire world. How about that? They have 7,000 members, and Adam has been president for the last 3 years. Adam, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Excited to talk labor and talk about what our union is like here in New York.
I'm ready to do that. Adam, by the way, is the co-founder and executive director of Musicians for Pension Security. He also founded the Jerome Ashby Scholarship at the Juilliard School. So he's got a lot of credentials. He's also studied at the Curtis Institute of Music and Yale University. And boy, I'll tell you, the pension issue could be a show just by itself. But let's talk about the return to Broadway, getting back to, I guess, near normal. I mean, this has been a couple of rough years for musicians, not just in New York, but all over the entire world. Talk to me about the effect of the pandemic and where we are today. Adam, go ahead.
Sure. I like what you said, near normal. It's kind of our new normal.
Yeah.
It's really been a long haul for us. My members, in a matter of 1 week, our entire industry shut down the week after March 12th. And within that 1 week, we had virtually had 100% unemployment. The union itself, which obviously operates on work dues, saw 95% of its revenue dry up overnight. And that was at the start where everyone was unsure of how long the pandemic would last. What is this going to be like? What's really going on here? We didn't, everything was very new. And it became very clear shortly thereafter that this pandemic was going to last for a while, and that our sector, the entertainment sector, and especially live performance, was going to be affected more than probably any other part of the economy by the nature of the fact that if you're a successful live performer, you are performing for as many people as possibly will come to see you. At least that's what you're hoping for. Mm-hmm. And by the nature of what we do and the fact that people could no longer gather, even at that time, in very small groups, let alone medium size or large groups, were totally out of the question. It was really a new reality, and we had a sort of snap into place, crisis management. And, you know, there's sort of been three parts to this pandemic, I guess, this initial part, which I'm describing. And we have well over 100 CBAs. We had to renegotiate virtually all of them as things shut down to try and figure out if we could get people wages moving forward during the pandemic, although our industry was shut, figure out what was going to happen with people's health care. We have a health fund that I'm the trustee of here at our local, with no employer contributions coming in. That was obviously going to lead to a crisis. And we had to figure out, just as a local, how we were going to financially survive, obviously, with no revenue and, a large staff. You have to make tough decisions in terms of figuring out a fiscal plan to make sure that we get to the second stage of the crisis, which is maintaining your power and while the pandemic is ongoing, to get to the third stage to reopen and actually have a strong and successful union. So in the first stage, that crisis management looked a lot like negotiating. We immediately got in touch with our allies and politicians, at the federal level and New York State level, and explained to them just how serious this was for our industry, explained to them the need for enhanced unemployment, the need for enhanced unemployment for gig workers and people that work on 1099, which a lot of musicians do, explained to them the need to start thinking about COBRA subsidies, that a majority of our members were going to lose health care. And that was the beginning. And then, through the pandemic, the main concern I had was what this would do to our industry long term, because as opposed to other industries, we were not going to come back anytime soon. So if you think back to 4 months, 5 months into the pandemic, the summer of 2020, it was becoming pretty clear that our industry was going to be shut down virtually, potentially for another year. And we were right. Our industry really is just opening now. So we were shuttered for a total of about 18, 19 months. And the middle part of the pandemic, my main concern, and I wrote about this in an op-ed that I wrote, which is titled, "We Must Avoid a Great Cultural Depression," was what happens to working people in the arts. And it was a thing that I saw was being overlooked, possibly because you don't think of everyday workers maybe in the arts field, but that's the arts and entertainment business is heavily unionized. And for the most part, these are at best middle-class jobs. People work in the entertainment industry and anything from being professional musician, singer, stagehands, crew, lighting design, makeup designers, costume designers, hair and makeup people. We have a whole community and ecosystem, and everybody across the board that did anything related to live events was completely virtually unemployed. And my concern was that it was going to lead to a cultural crisis because we simply were not getting the support we needed right out of the gate from city, state, and federal government. And I didn't really feel that there was an understanding and an acknowledgement of what we actually do. And the arts across the board in the United States is a major industry. It's a larger industry than the agriculture industry itself. And, it's not surprising that people don't know that or think of it as an industry in that way. But the fact is that we employ over 1 million people across the United States in arts jobs. We bring in billions of dollars into the economy every year, and we're a really important sector. And the upshot of it not being tended to during the pandemic would create a cultural crisis, and that our communities here, both in New York and around the country, value the arts. It's what brings people together. It's,
right.
It's what people think about, whether it's a tough time and you're, you know, having a bad day, or you're at a wedding or a bar mitzvah, or you're going. Everybody remembers where they were for their first, you know, live concert. You know, we have that ability to get through to people. And my concern was that if that wasn't valued properly, we would continue to see flight from our industry. Great young musicians, actors, stagehands would be finding work elsewhere. And at the end of this sort of 18 or 19 months, things would look really different. So that was what we really focused on during the middle of the shutdown. And those were conversations with employers, with politicians, with our own members. And, you know, we came up with a bunch of policy and programs to try and mitigate that sustained period in the middle. And as we emerged from the crisis, we started seeing those relationships paying off. And we were, you know, aside from the normal things, we had to virtually renegotiate again all of our CBAs to get people back to work. Some of the most important aspects of that are health and safety and making sure people are protected with what is the new world working with COVID and live performance. But other aspects were, these are, you know, out of arts organizations that frankly had a complicated pandemic financially. There was some government aid given to larger arts organizations and commercial arts organizations. So we were able to sort of understand how to balance that with the need for concessions coming back. But it's been a very, very tough 18 or 19 months because it's been all concessionary. And the good news is when we finally started to reemerge in the spring, the American Rescue Plan that President Biden signed into law, and we here in New York have a very close relationship with Senator Schumer's office, who had been working on this for years, really helped alleviate some of those concerns that I stated in the first two parts of the pandemic. One thing was, as you said up front, pension. Our pension had been in critical and declining, and on top of the pandemic, we were facing 30% cuts in some places to hard-earned benefits. That's on top of a pandemic. Overnight, that was restored and fixed. Mm-hmm. They extended enhanced unemployment, the child tax credit. The COBRA subsidy coverage, and this was going to come at maybe 75%. Senator Schumer got it in at 100%. So when that package came, it sort of signaled extended relief and an acknowledgement of what had been going on in our industry versus other industries that had gone back to work 4 or 5 months after the pandemic started. And then we started creating actual jobs and the first live performance here in New York with our partners at the city level. There's a great MLME commissioner here in New York, and we worked with the mayor and Commissioner Del Castillo to launch a program of live performance at vaccination sites all across the five boroughs. And it was some of the first paying jobs coming out of COVID that my musicians really had access to. And we sort of built from there. Over the summer, we came to agreements at the Met Opera, with the Broadway League, with American Ballet Theater, and now we're starting to see them come to fruition, and everybody's starting to go back to work. A number of Broadway shows have opened in the last month to great success. The Met Opera opened with great success the other night, the Philharmonic, the City Ballet. ABT is opening in the next couple weeks. So we've gotten through it, and that's what it looked like. Now my most important focus is part that we don't leave anybody behind. It's mm-hmm. not going to be an even recovery for even for all of my musicians. You know, there's going to be part of our industry that really shrunk, and I want to make sure none of those musicians, a majority of which work in the freelance world, are left behind. So we put together some aid programs. We're focused on organizing and building our power as we come out of the pandemic. There's been a real lesson that if we're not organized, if we're not educated at the work site in the importance of a union and union protections on the job, whether it's not just the protection of your wages anymore, it's literally your health and safety to be well protected on the job now. So we've bolstered our organizing, and we're doing organizing trainings and education with our members as we come out, in addition to that financial relief program. And, you know, I'm very focused on the fact that as we continue to come out, just keeping my eye on where the industry has gone, because to your point, the near normal that we're at, where are we going next, and what is that new normal, and how do we make sure we as a union are prepared for it? And that's really my main focus right now.
Well, you said it all. you incorporated the last 18, 19 months in what you just said here on America's Workforce. Through it all, I don't know how you kept your sanity. I have to tell you that. I don't know how you did it, but obviously you had some good training there. Adam, I got to take a quick break. Adam Krauthammer is on our live line. He's president of Local 802, the American Federation of Musicians out of New York. Later in the show, Jimmy Hart will be joining us. Jimmy is head of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Adam Krauthammer. Adam is president of Local 802 of the American Federation of Musicians out of Greater New York. I have to ask you, are you friends with Len DiCosimo? Len's a sponsor of this show in the Cleveland area. We record the show in Cleveland, Ohio at Ironworkers Local 17 at their offices near downtown Cleveland. And he's with Local 4 of the Cleveland Federation. I take it you know Len?
I do know Len, and I'm glad he's a sponsor. I don't know if he paid you guys to have me on, but he is a great guy and a great colleague, and I've learned a lot from watching him as one of the younger union presidents in the AFM, and glad you guys have had him on.
Yeah, he's a heck of a musician. In fact, we use a lot of Local 4's music as what we call bumper music on the show. It's important. We have the union element on the show in many different ways. So, yeah, good guy. I figured you know him, so I just wanted to throw that out there. You know, in my last conversation with him, we were talking about the vaccine for instance, the Cleveland Orchestra, and I could only assume similar situation in New York. What's the protocol now with the vaccine?
So, on the workers' side, across the board, what's developed over the last 4 months is generally mandatory vaccination policies coming from employers, and they propose them because they're mandatory subjects of bargaining. And across the board, our local is supportive of these policies as long as they follow the proper legal exemptions. Then I'd say about 2 months ago, in addition to having a mandatory vaccination policy with a legal exemption, what we saw was that the Delta variant was really, really serious. And advisors, both on our side and on most of the employer side, epidemiologists and public health experts, said that what we really know now is that even if you're vaccinated, you still can get COVID and spread it at work. And by the nature of what we do, we needed to sort of act quickly and incorporate a proactive mechanism to make sure people were even safer beyond just mandatory vaccination. And that's where we've also added, with, I'd say, a majority, if not 100% of our employers, that there is a regular testing regimen that goes along with mandatory vaccination, whether it's a PCR test twice a week or a rapid antigen test, sometimes even more than that. There are Broadway theaters who are testing 5 to 7 days a week, but a minimum of twice a week along with the mandatory vaccination really creates a secure baseline. You're never going to be 100%. That's just the nature of this virus, but both management and the union have been able to find a good place where we feel like we've come up with a very safe plan for the workers.
Well, that sounds good. Well, I tell you, you've been through so much here in the last year and a half. It seems like you've grown another skin around your body just to protect yourself from what's going on in the world today. So it's good to hear that those protocols are in place. Moving forward here, I mentioned earlier in the show that you are co-founder and executive director of Musicians for Pension Security. I have to ask you, you mentioned this in the first segment about the American Rescue Plan, which helped so many people. I mean, it was designed for the multi-employer plans, and it helped, I believe, literally hundreds, if not thousands, of plans around the country. Is that still an ongoing issue, or where do we stand with pension security on behalf of musicians today, Adam?
Sure. Well, it's much more of a settled issue, although all of the statutes and the law, you know, are really, now that it's enacted, they have to implement it, and we're watching closely. But the reality is, we overnight, and I said this to Senator Schumer when he came and visited with our members, he probably had the most tangible effect on my members' lives during this pandemic, and it came through this pension rescue. Literally, before it was passed, we were on the doorstep of what really ranged from 15 to almost 40% cuts. Majority of people were looking at 30% cuts to existing benefits. So money that they had already earned, money the union had bargained into a pension fund on their behalf, lost at the end of their careers. And frankly, it was just totally unfair. And virtually overnight with the American Rescue Plan, that was all changed for multi-employer plans that were in critical and declining. So I was really happy that that happened. You know, the pension is sort of near and issue is near and dear to me. That's how I got involved more in activism and helping musicians. And, you know, I'll just say this as a word of caution. Our fund, you know, didn't have to be in the shape that it was. And part of the reason I'm here and now in leadership is that there, frankly, wasn't a good faith, transparent discussion of really the state of affairs at our fund and the reality of some of the decisions that were made not working out. And I always feel like that's a thing in labor that we need to be better about in terms of being clear with our own people so that we build trust with them with what's really going on with things like their benefit funds or their contracts. It's really important to me. So I started out being an advocate there for years. And in fact, Senator Sherrod Brown really deserves the credit. For years, I had worked with his office out in Ohio and going to D.C. and meeting with them at his Senate office. His staff is great. He was key to developing the Bush-Lewis Act, which parts of eventually became the American Rescue Plan. So shout out to Ohio and the senator for really making the nuts and bolts of it possible, and Senator Schumer for getting it done.
You can't find a more blue-collar senator than Sherrod Brown. I mean, we've had him on the show when he was a member of the House of Representatives. Yeah, he's a monthly guest here. In fact, he joins us on the first Thursday of every month and gives us an update. And we were on that issue from day one. It took many, many years, probably about 7 or 8 years. I remember when Congress adjourned back, I think it was in 2014, they had an opportunity to address the pension crisis, and they decided to walk away from it. But Sherrod stood tall on that one and finally got it done. Yeah, I'll tell you, that's an issue that really needs more attention in America, because especially young people, they don't understand what Social Security is all about or pensions, because they're young, you know, they're going to live forever. They don't count on those things. And I remember even when I was young, Adam, I didn't think I would see Social Security. And here I am today. I'm 68 years old. I'm enjoying it. You know, people don't understand that kind of thing. And I'm a member. I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA. I mean, I started in radio back in 1973, 74. I joined the union in 74. I'm enjoying that pension now. And it's great. And I'm still able to do work in a union settlement like America's workforce, a union shop. So it's really important that we get that issue across to so many more people. And I think it's like half of America doesn't have any pension plan at all, at least 50%. And you know where the defined benefit plans have gone. I mean, it's just a few left today.
I would say you're right. And so I started this job when I was 37. I'm 40 now. And part of my frustration with the pension, I grew up in a union house. My dad was in the teachers union forever, and all he talked about was his pension. And he's collecting it now, and I knew the importance of that. But I think over many, many decades, to your point, it's become sort of, sort of a political talking point, and also, you know, frankly, just manipulated for people in my generation with either, I guess, misinformation or whatever else, that pensions won't exist. That pensions, you know, you don't have control of it. That's not a great thing. You know, it's an old thing. We're moving in this new direction. And eventually it waters things down. And, you know, the real unfortunate effect of some of the union pension funds being mismanaged is that it plays right into that misinformation. And propaganda is really the word that I'm looking for. Propaganda works over a long period of time. And I thought it was really important to show people my generation that we're going to need this thing. and we should expect good stewardship over it, you know, now and into the future. And that's something that here in New York, all of my musicians are now hit to and paying attention that, you know, we don't want to see the same problem happen again 10 years from now, because right. we know how important a pension is. And more than anything else, we've talked about this before, organizing, that is one of your weapons out there. And to be able to explain to non-members the importance of having benefits and a union pension that is healthy is something that you can't underrate. And if you get it through to people, that's really a great way to bring them in. So I'm glad we have that tool back now.
Absolutely. Well said, my man. I'm really glad that we touched on that, because that's an issue that needs to be elaborated on. We can do that in future shows. And also, I'd like to invite you back, because I saw on your website a couple of comments about the exploitation of digital media. That's a really good subject, man. Let's save that for another time. In the meantime, Mr. Krauthammer, you keep doing what you're doing. In Greater New York, 7,000 members of Local 802, local802afm.org is your website. So stay in touch and stay safe, okay?
Thanks again for having me. You as well.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, Jimmy Hart will be joining us. Jimmy, president of the Metal Trades Department of the Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go to line number two right now. Welcome back to the show, Jimmy Hart. Jimmy is president of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. He's had that position for 5 years now. It was effective July 1st, 2016. He started his career in the pipe trades with the United Association in New York City in 1976. Jimmy Hart, how are we doing today, my brother?
Good afternoon, brother. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
You know, I was reading your bio last night, and I kind of giggled a little bit. I know you love New York. You're raised in Brooklyn. Are you still a Mets and a Jets fan after what's been going on with those two teams?
I'm hopelessly devoted to those two teams, brother. You know what I mean? I live and die with them, you know, much to my chagrin, but, you know, without my Mets and without my Jets, you know, sometimes life isn't worth living.
Hey, how do you think I feel? We had two losing seasons with the Cleveland Browns. Well, we had many losing seasons, but we were 0-32. However, things are looking brighter in Cleveland, Ohio, with the Cleveland Browns. No doubt about that.
You know, it's not lost on me that that 0-32 streak was broken when you beat the New York Jets. So
I want to tell you That's something. For sure. I was at that game too, buddy.
Well, at least you got some free beer, right? You got free beer out of it. So.
That's right. That's right. So the metal trades department, let's get into it. We're talking 17 national, international unions, all affiliated, more than 100,000 workers in private industry and federal establishments work under contracts negotiated by the MTD councils. So how are we faring here, especially with the pandemic? Hopefully we're on the back end of that, but I'd like to hear from you as president of the Metal Trades Department.
Well, you see, our department, you know, we've got ourselves together, you know, and the reason why we got ourselves together is because we've got someplace to go. And what I mean by that is that we're going to confront the tough issues all the time as a union. What's important to workers is what's important to the affiliates of the Metal Trades Department. And each and every day, as we accomplish our mission, everybody knows who we are. And whether it was the pandemic, whether it's a budget crisis, okay, the Metal Trades, in my estimation, is the union of the future. Because what we're doing through time, you know, we go back to 1908 as a department, and our industry has evolved. It's strictly a manufacturing and production industry. It's evolved over the years from a wartime economy to a service economy, from building ships to building nuclear submarines. And before you know it, we do the cleanup of all the waste that occurred due to those buildups. The metal trades is the union that can deal and address the issues of any type of worker, from the white collar professional to the blue collar laborer, you know, digging trenches. It's about hardworking men and women who understand the value of a union contract, understand the value of a good relationship with employers, and understand that a strong America is tantamount when a strong middle class is in place.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we're at.
You know, I was on your website, metaltrades.org, and I saw a little clip of you talking about the importance of safety. And you were calling attention to the impact and influence employees have on making safety in the workplace matter. And Jimmy, as you know, I mean, I was just reading a story yesterday from the Labor Department, which, and we've got a really strong Labor Department now under the direction of Marty Walsh, about one guy whose head was crushed in a, this was in Northeastern Ohio. It happened in March because the company was just, you know, lax in safety. And, you know, in the metal trades, you're talking about some, you know, dangerous work areas. And I'm just wondering how we're faring, especially, you know, there's always a pushback by employers saying, oh, you know, we got to ramp up quotas. You know the story. You've heard that many, many times. But I'm wondering how that's all fitting in today. What's your view on that?
Workers' best friend is an educated workforce. Okay. And the more you educate workers to safety, the more you make them aware of the hazards involved with making a living, okay, the better they'll fare at work. You know, the whole goal always is go to work in the morning and come home. Okay, we want to get back home to our family. Right. We don't ever want workers, you know, to have to choose between their paycheck and their health. And that's, the more educated they are, the more that means their union is more proactive, because workers depend on their unions to give them not only information, but to cut through the spin of the information. A proactive union automatically will have an educated workforce. And in fact, that means that the contractor has to start to pay attention. And in the metal trades, we've been able to do that. We have a proactive workforce, a well-educated workforce, who works hand in hand and demands to be partners with its employers. In other words, we don't just want a relationship where we get a paycheck. We want a relationship where we may not have the final say, but our word is always heard. And when our word is heard, it fosters a relationship between the employer and the worker, which we have a safety record second to none. And again, like you brought out, we do the most dangerous of jobs. You know, we're working high, we're working low, we're working in, atomic landfills, you name it, we face it. And I am so impressed with the men and women of the metal trades over the years and our international affiliates who are really have approached safety in such a way that the contractor is more productive and the contractor is more profitable. And it shows in our paychecks.
Jimmy, I want to talk about the PRO Act. It's actually now the Richard Trumka PRO Act. Last time you and I had a conversation, you're 150% union. I mean, you're born and bred union, New York City, strong union town. I'm just wondering how you feel moving forward here with this. Well, we got a pro-union president. We got some Democrats that are kind of shaky right now, but... that being said, how do you feel about the future, especially with passage of the PRO Act?
You know, it's interesting. You know, the Democratic Party is a big tent. And, you know, when you have a big tent, you're going to have many different shades of people.
Uh-huh.
And you pay a price for that, right? I mean, you don't always get your way. But the time... at this moment, is to pass the PRO Act. Why? Because it's long overdue. There has been no major labor reform in this country in over 70 years. You know, this is legislation that has not kept up with the times. Social media, company sophistication, offshoring, you name it. The company has built up such an advantage over the worker that workers are no longer able to exercise their right for fear of retribution to organize. And I believe Congress on both sides of the aisle understand that. Now, who's ready to move? Who's ready to act? Well, you know, we have some Republicans out there that want to do it. And we have all the Democrats that want to do it. It's time to get it done. You know, I often say this, okay, sinners belong in church and workers belong in the union, and nothing should stop their path from organizing. And that's what the PRO Act is. That's what the PRO Act will achieve. And it's aptly named after our great friend and labor leader, you know, Rich Trumka. I mean, this was his dream, his vision to reform labor law. And I believe we're going to get it past the goal line. We've got the right president. We've got a great House Speaker. We have a great Senate Majority Leader, all pro-union people. You know, throwbacks to another time and another day that understand that America works best when it works union.
Jimmy, all I can say, if sinners belong in church, we need more churches.
Oh, no doubt. And we're ready to build them.
I love talking to you, man. Jimmy Hart, President of the Metal Trades of the AFL-CIO. Go to their website. It's metaltrades.org. America works best when it works union. Man, you couldn't say it any better. I love it. I love it. So you take care. How long are you going to be hanging in there as president of the Metal Trades? Any idea?
I'm going to stay here as long as I can be productive. You know, as long as I have the drive to achieve the mission and as long as the workers will have me.
Well, you still got the fire in your belly, brother, so keep it up and keep in touch, all right?
Thank you, my friend. Stay safe.
Jimmy Hart, president of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and the Ohio State Building Trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.